Hello and welcome to another catch-up episode. It's been a while. How are you? If you're on your own, feel free to answer. You know, just one word. I'm going to ask you again. Ready? How are you? Ooh, okay. Wasn't expecting that. Whenever I do that, it always just reminds me of Romper Room. I think I explained that on a previous podcast. This lady used to talk out of the TV and pretend she could see us as kids. Used to blow my mind. Well, I'm very well, thank you for asking. I'm sure you asked. Been very busy. Lots going on. On the podcast front, it was quite a lot of feedback saying, yes, do have some people on who are curators or art gallery owners or collectors or, you know, people who are not necessarily artists, but we'd like to get some information out of them. So I've already recorded an episode with two people. It's on quite a, it's like an art concept that they, art concepts, two separate people. So that went well. So I'll be interested to hear what you think of that. I had the marathon with Nicholas Uribe, which was 6 hours long. I don't know if you've listened to that yet, but if you haven't, it's fantastic. 6 hours is a long time. I always stand up when I'm recording the podcasts, which is a trick I learned from sales, actually. If you ever have to make a difficult phone call, stand up. Not that I find the podcast difficult, but if you're ever like trying to sell somebody something, or if you're a little bit unsure, if you stand up when you make the phone call, it makes a huge difference just to your energy. It just comes across in your voice. So yeah, that's one of the reasons I like to stand up, because I think when I'm sitting down, I kind of, you know, I get very relaxed and it all gets a bit mellow. So yeah, for me, I think it's better for me to stand up. Anyway, so 6 hours of standing up. I mean, we did have a break in the middle for lunch, and I did the meditation thing, the live Instagram meditation thing. So we took an hour break. But yeah, I mean, it was amazing to me that the time went by so fast. I just found Nicolas so interesting. He had so many interesting things to say, and they just really were in alignment with a lot of things that I was had been thinking about myself. And he's just, I think I said it in the show notes, he's just that perfect kind of podcast guest, because he's got comprehensive knowledge about his subject, which in this case was art. And he is very good at explaining it. And he's just a natural storyteller. So yeah, it's great. If you haven't listened to that, it's great. But that was a bit of a monster episode. That was a record breaker, 6 hours. And when we got to the end, he was joking, saying, "Oh, nobody's going to be listening to that." To this, and I said, "No, this is going to be very popular," and it is. The number of people who've got in touch going, "Thank you so much for that, for 6 hours. Fantastic. I listened through it." Some people listen to it in, you know, over a couple of days. Other people listen to it all straight through. The best one I heard was a lady who got in touch to say that she played it over the loudspeakers in her work. And I thought that was hilarious. And I was joking with her, going, "I hope everyone else in the office didn't mind." But she said she works in a liquor store. which is, it was only drive through, but still, I thought it was really funny to have the that episode with Nicholas Uribe blasting out over the as people were coming in to buy their beer and whiskey and whatever else they were buying in the liquor store. So yeah, that was a bit of a monster. And then yeah, I've recorded that one with those two people, and then coming up on Wednesday, I've got Robert Lang, who is an artist, but he's also a gallery owner. So starting to get into that. So that'll be interesting. I'll be asking for questions for him on a day or two. And then I've been in touch with the principal of a pretty big atelier. And it hasn't actually been confirmed yet for definite, so I can't say any more than that, but that will be pretty good. If and when it comes together. I think it will come together. So yeah, lots going on in the podcast. One thing I would say about the podcast is I get a lot of people suggesting artists to talk to, which is lovely. I'm very happy to get it, because if I don't know the artist, I'm delighted to discover a new artist. And if I do know them, it's still just lovely to get feedback. I will say I do have a preference towards women artists because, okay, I've balanced it up. I've pretty much, it's a roughly, you know, the same, maybe slightly more women. But just generally, I think women artists don't get enough exposure. So, you know, there are so many fantastic artists out there and there's so many great art podcasts out there. I'm, you know, sure that everyone will get to have their interview and be spoken about. And that's not to say I won't, you know, have a man, but I lean towards women artists much more so. So if I get two fantastic artists and one of them is a man and one of them is a woman, I'll generally get in touch with the woman first. Just because I, just from all my, experience in the art world, it just seems like women don't get enough chances. And that just seems, yeah, unbalanced to me. So if I can do in this my own little small way, redress that a little bit, then yeah, I will. So yeah, I do generally lean towards great women artists. So if you are going to suggest somebody to me, I'm just telling you in advance, if it's a man, they'll go on the huge list of men artists. But I lean more towards women because that list is a lot smaller. And it's not because there's less great women artists. It's just they're less well known. And if I can help change that, I will. Where we came out of lockdown here in Ireland and then we're kind of gone back in a little bit. They were all set to open the pubs, but then they've put it off by a little bit. And yeah, it looks like there's going to be mandatory mask wearing. There isn't a big reaction to it here. I know for, seems to me like just from my observations of what's going on, like regardless of what you believe, what I do is I'm kind of looking at people's faces and I'm kind of, you know, I've got this, I'm quite sensitive to people because of my work as a therapist for a long time. So I can kind of have a good sense of, you know, what I think is going on for people. And as I've been saying, like the whole thing seems to be mostly about fear. And regardless of what I personally believe and what I personally think about what's going on, I'm kind of more concerned with what it, you know, how people are doing. So like when I'm, you know, in the supermarket and, you know, people are wearing masks and they're, you know, particularly the older people and they look afraid. Like I won't have a problem wearing a mask if it gets to that, because I can see it's just going to make them less afraid. Or if somebody is telling me, you know, oh, isn't it terrible about the, you know, this number of, you know, new cases, and like, I don't kind of get into it with them and go, oh, now that's not actually true. And even though, like, for me, just personally, this is just, you know, how it is for me. Like, I've spent 30 plus years working with people to do with their health and to do with helping their bodies repair themselves. That's pretty much what I've been doing, my work as a craniosacral therapist. And I've seen miraculous things happen. Like things that if I told you about them, you wouldn't believe me. You'd think that's bullshit. Like that couldn't be true, you know. But I've witnessed them, right? I've experienced them. Everything from the very beginning with my younger brother, Derek, who when he was 16 was in a pretty major car accident. He was hit by a car. He went straight up in the air, landed on his head, rushed to hospital. And the doctors, you know, said to my mother, no, he's not going to make it through the night. He did make it through the night. Then they said, well, he's not going to make it through to the end of the week. And he did. And then they were like, well, he's not going to make it to the end of the month kind of thing. And he kept like not doing what they said. But the remarkable thing for me was that when Derek was in the intensive care unit, or I think that they're called ICUs now, it was the head injury. Everybody in the ward had head injuries, and there were people who had head injuries that were a lot less than Derek. Like Derek's he had a brain stem twist, which is pretty intense, like it's pretty bad. But there were people who just fell off ladders and, you know, nothing not as serious as Derek. And like these people were some of them were dying, like, and it was that to me was the beginning of kind of going, how come what's happening here that they are dying and Derek is not? And like the Derek story was all the way along, he did the opposite to what the doctors were saying, because he was in the coma for, I think it was 3 months. And each month that it went on, they were going, well, the longer it goes on, the less chance he has of waking up. And he became, you know, very thin. He got pneumonia like 2 or 3 times. Each time they were like, nope, that's it. He's not going to make it. I'm laughing now. God, it was horrible at the time. And yeah, and then at the end, he did wake up. And it wasn't like a Hollywood kind of wake up, you know, because when someone's in a coma, like I had the previously, I'd never really been up close with somebody in a coma before. I kind of thought it was like this, it is in the movies, like that their eyes are closed and they kind of have their hands, you know, across their chest and like a little angel lying in the bed and they're perfectly still. And, you know, there's kind of harp music playing somewhere. Not at all. Derek's eyes were open. But he wasn't there. You could just tell he wasn't there. And you know, he could be holding his hand and he'd squeeze your hand and he'd go, oh, do that again, do that again. And he wouldn't, you know, he never did anything twice. But, you know, he would kind of, his body would make these kind of motions and you'd think he was, something was happening, but no, you know. And how he woke up was he started moving one of his fingers, I think it was his finger or his thumb. And we'd kind of go, do that again. And he'd do it again. And we'd go, do it again, Derek. And he'd do it again. And that was the beginning. It was like he woke up from his one finger. And that slowly progressed to the rest of his body. And even with that, the doctors are going, well, even if he does wake up fully, he's going to be a vegetable for the rest of his life. And, you know, like, don't get the wrong idea about Irish doctors. I've, you know, worked in Australia and different, you know, places. I know it's the same and it's nothing against doctors. It's like they have to, not have to, but they're trained to give the worst possible scenario. Maybe it's changed a bit, but from what I've heard, it's not. Anyway, they were saying I was going to be a vegetable. And then when he it was obviously obvious that he wasn't a vegetable. They were like, well, he'll never walk again. And then, of course, he did. And he eventually had the, which was a kind of Hollywood thing. He pushed the wheelchair that he was told he would never get out of. He wheeled it into the office of the doctor who told him that. And good on the doctor. He said, you know, I've never been as glad to be wrong about something. So for me, like, that was the beginning of just wondering about why we get sick and why we get better and why some people get better and other people don't. And, you know, like say with in that ward where that Derek was in, where people were dying and Derek wasn't. And he had much worse brain injuries, you know. He's great, by the way. He's married. He's got 3 big kids now. They're not kids anymore. They're all teenagers. But so for me, like, and my experience of working with people's bodies and the inherent natural ability of our bodies to repair and fix and overcome amazing things, and this whole question of why people get sick and why people get better. I mean, I wrote a book about it. Like, that's how much I've been into it and thought about it, right? So for me, as I look at what people are talking about online and in the news and just in the shops, you know, or wherever, you know, whatever, it's all about things that I think are slightly, if not, I'm being kind here, slightly off point or majorly off point, because it's all about things like masks and vaccines and nothing against vaccines, but just or things that are like, okay, what I mean is there's no talk about your immune system and how to improve it. There's no talk about diet, how to improve your diet to get, you know, to give your body the best chance of doing what it wants to do naturally. There's no talk about exercise, stress, pollution, the things that are around it. There's very little talk about things that you can take responsibility for personally. Most of the talk seems to be about how can we get something to fix us? How can we get something to shield us and cut us off from nature a bit more? Which is very alien to how I see the world. But, and this is what I'm getting at, is like for me, that's all fine. I don't need to, you know, tell people that in the shopping supermarket or on the street. Go, no, well, actually, you know, what's really going on? And, you know, well, you want to know about masks? Well, let me tell you about masks. I don't feel that, because my thing is I don't want to make people more afraid, because it's all available. Like, the information is all out there. So if I can find it, if I can come across fantastic interviews that pretty much explain what's going on very easily, like, I don't know if you've ever watched any interviews with, Dr. Zach Bush. He's very good, very knowledgeable. There are others. I'm not talking about the crazy, you know, conspiracy theory, you know, oh, it's a hoax, or that's all another version of fear, because, and it's also another irresponsible thing, because thinking that somebody's doing something to you, that's as irresponsible as I want to kind of completely ignore the natural processes of my body and just take a pill and make this whole thing go away. To me, they're all the same. My point is that for me, I'll happily wear a mask or whatever is going to help people not be freaked out. I don't want to be the lone person in the supermarket making a big statement and frightening, you know, 80-year-old ladies who are just terrified because of everything, because of where they are in their life and their journey and their experience, and they've just, that's all the information they're getting. You know, I don't feel like it's my place to sort of have a big confrontation with them and educate them, because, like, for me, it's the whole thing is all part of the same thing. It's all part of the great kind of mystery of life and the unfoldment of life. So I'm not arrogant. I mean, I am arrogant, but I'm not arrogant enough to think that I know better than the great movement of life. So for me, compassion and kindness and gentleness and sensitivity and watching and seeing what, you know, is going on for somebody, and how can I, you know, I find that I can do a lot more with my presence by just being with people, being around people, you know, like if they're talking to me, it's not like I'm agreeing with them. If they're telling me some horror, scary terror story about statistics, this and mortality rates, that and new cases, that I'm not saying I'll just agree with them, but I will just nod and listen to them and let them know that I've heard them, because often that is more important. Because for me, it's like, if I can help them be less stressed, that's probably much more beneficial. If their adrenaline levels can come down a little bit, if they can feel a little bit easier. And that's certainly what I observe. And again, I'm not telling anyone what to do. I'm just telling you what I do. Just my observation is, what starts off as a scary story, if I'm listening to them, and then once they feel like they've been heard, then they can sort of, they calm down a bit. And then the next thing they might say is, God, it's a lovely day today though, isn't it? Or, oh, I was down by the beach or whatever. I mean, I'm very lucky. I live in a beautiful part of the country, part of the world, part of the country. So the nature is all around. So it's very easy to kind of be rejuvenated by the nature. So what I would encourage you to do is, if you're talking to anybody, I find it very helpful to relate to them as if, I don't know if you've ever come upon a traffic accident, but if you've ever come upon a traffic accident and there's somebody who's been involved in the accident, but they're not hurt, but they're kind of in shock or they're very afraid, I would encourage you to relate to everybody like that, because everybody feels, my sense of it is, everyone is feeling like that, but they're just, you know, covering it over as best they can. And it comes out in all sorts of ways, from anger to, you know, strange behaviors. Like, you probably notice this, like people who, you know, or even just who you get a sense of, normally wouldn't behave in a certain way, they're behaving very strangely. And my observation is that all comes down to fear, and this, because there's so many uncertain things in the world, and, you know, human beings, we don't like uncertainty. It's not easy for us to deal with. So yeah, I would encourage you to relate to everybody as somebody who's really frightened, terrified, regardless of what they look like. I would treat them in that kind of gentle way, you know, like say with the traffic accident, you wouldn't start going, how fast were you driving? Yeah, that's probably not a good idea to be going that fast. And were you wearing a seatbelt? You know, you really should have worn a seatbelt. You know, you wouldn't get into that then, because it's not the time. And my feeling is, it's not the time for a lot of the things that people are, you know, getting into with other people. So yeah, treating people as if they're very afraid. As a kind of follow on from that, for myself, I think I mentioned in the last podcast, you know, that I do these four things. I do this podcast, I I paint, I write, and I treat people as a cranial sacral therapist. But with the lockdown, as soon as the lockdown happened here, I closed my cranial sacral practice because it's, it was just one of those things, like everything else had to close down. But when it's been closed, I've been thinking about it and I've been kind of turning it over. And I kind of had a feeling that it was kind of the end of me working in that way. But I wasn't really sure what I meant. So, I mean, I was talking about uncertainty. I've been kind of living with quite a lot of uncertainty. But then I'm kind of used to it because craniosacral work, one of the first things you have to do is get comfortable with uncertainty. So it's not new for me. So I think I mentioned that during the lockdown, people were getting in touch with me and asking if they could work with me remotely, which is a thing that I can do. It's just not something I advertised. So it was kind of that going on. And then thinking, I started doing the meditations on Instagram. I think I mentioned that. I meditate throughout the day anyway, but I do this one live on Instagram. So that's been happening and getting the feedback from that. So anyway, it's all kind of coalesced into a new kind of thing that I'm doing. And I'm almost... I mean, I'll tell you about it now, but the website's not completely there yet. It's not completely all working, but it's called Further Emergence. So it's furtheremergence.com. And it's kind of for a certain type of person that I've been working with over the years, but I particularly like working with this kind of situation with the person, and it's something that I haven't seen a lot of other people working with or addressing. And it's that kind of thing of like somebody who's sort of wakes up one day or one kind of afternoon and kind of goes, what, my life just doesn't fit, I don't fit in my life. It's like, you know, it has that quality of like just waking up and going, what's going on? Or it can manifest in different ways. Another way, you know, is that a person might have persistent kind of symptoms, weird things going on in their body that they can't get a definite answer for, or the answer is not really sufficient. It doesn't really help them. And the symptoms are bad, but they're not life-threatening. And that they can go on for years, but they have this kind of quality of, but the symptoms have put their life on hold. That's another way that this kind of thing can manifest. It can be like sleep or energy issues, like having trouble sleeping, or then when you get to sleep, you just feel like you're drugged, but you feel tired all the time. Or it can be feeling homesick when you're at home. That's another one. And really what it comes down to is like, if for the sort of person that has this thing going on, it's very disorienting, it's very painful, but it's, from my perspective, it's a very natural process because it's something that I've gone through. I've gone through it with people, other people. I've helped other people going through it. The people who are going through it can feel like they're very alone because it's such an odd kind of thing. And what it looks like and what it is a growth spurt. I talked about like everyone's gone through a growth spurt or the world has gone through a growth spurt, but this is like an individual growth spurt. So like we all kind of can relate to, yeah, I had growth spurts when I was growing up. For myself, I used to get really bad pains in my shins right up into my teenage years. When I'd go through a growth spurt. But at a certain point, your body just stops growing and it switches more into just replicating itself. But the growth spurts continue on the inside. We keep growing on the inside, and sometimes we grow in spurts. And when you grow and have a growth spurt, it can be really disorienting. So those are the kind of people that I'm working with now. And I've kind of set things up, or I'm in the process of setting things up to help people who are going in through that kind of thing in different ways. So I've got the meditations that I'm doing. They will probably switch over onto my Further Emergence Instagram and Facebook page. So there's the meditation, so that someone can meditate, come along and meditate. And I don't know if you've seen any of those meditation videos, but meditation's a funny thing. Like, it's the sort of thing that it's talked about, it's written about, everyone's doing it. Like, it's so, you listen to any interview and the people are saying, oh yeah, how did you deal with that? And they'll say this, that, and the other, and oh, and meditation really helps. So there's, it's very part of the, you know, conversation. But what people have got back to me, or the feedback I've been getting from people is, they're just delighted to have somebody to actually explain it in simple terms, because there's a feeling of like, what do you actually do? How does that actually work? What the hell, you know, exactly? I know the principle of it, but what's actually involved? So, yeah. So on the meditations, I nearly always explain, unless I'm at a time, I'll explain what I do just for people who are new to it. And the feedback from that's been very good. And then it's just a little 15 minute meditation. And then because it's Instagram Live, through the kind of whiz-bottery of how that all works, it's recorded afterwards as well, so people can watch it afterwards. And it's the same with the Facebook one. So there's that. People can do that. Then I'm also doing a Zoom group where people can come and ask questions and talk and, you know, we can a little bit of meditation as well, but that's another thing that is that people can participate in, or they can watch afterwards. And then I work one to I'm working one to one with people as well, and that's a combination of the talking and then the distance work as well. So it's kind of like I kind of think of it as the talking bit is the in front of the scenes, and then the treatment is the behind the scenes, and they both work really well together. And I've been getting like really beautiful testimonials, really kind of, you know, made me a little bit teary. So beautiful. So yeah, that's what I'm doing. Furtheremergence.com. That's all happening. You'll probably see more of that sort of stuff on my feeds. And as I say, it's not all like working 100%. And I mean, what I like about it is, you know, when I had my craniosacral practice, I just worked 2 days a week, and I'm just going to do the same for the one-to-ones with people. And I can only work with like 8 people a week. So it's not, you know, it's not like a huge net I'm casting, but I don't need to get like loads of people to work with or anything like that. But I find it really, I don't know if you ever had this feeling, but I sort of feel like it makes the most use of me. It's probably the best way I can explain it. When I'm doing that kind of work, I sort of feel like I'm bringing everything to bear on it. And yeah, it's lovely. I really enjoy it. And in a kind of similar vein, I had this thing happen, which I'll explain it to you, and maybe I find it kind of sweet and fascinating, but I'll explain it to you, right? So, you know, I did this yoga art, which is a kind of digital art that I do. And it's just something I like to do. I don't do a lot of them. I do them every now and then, and I put them up. And I mean, I have them all on my shop thing, so you can buy all that stuff, you know, the canvas versions or the poster versions or t-shirts or, you know, all that kind of stuff. So all my yoga art is there. And every now and then, you know, it like, I don't know who I was talking to. It was Nicholas Uribe, and he was saying he doesn't care about what people do with his stuff. And I really see that with my yoga art. Like, anytime I look at Pinterest, it nearly always pops up. One of my yoga art pieces will pop up, not credited to me or anybody. It's just been used on some yoga blog or some yoga whatever. And I kind of have that kind of thing that he was talking about of not really. It'd be nice if it linked back to my website, but I'm not hugely fussed about it. Anyway, this lady, Emma, like often I'll get people who saying, oh, I love this yoga artwork, and as I say, people buy it, I'm assuming, for the yoga rooms or the yoga studios or wherever they do their yoga. But this lady Emma posted a few of my yoga pictures and was saying how lovely she thought they were. And she said she had it'd be a wish come true for her if I did one for her, because they're, most of the yoga art I do is based on, it starts off as a photograph and then I do my digital whiz-bottery with it and it ends up as the yoga art. So I thought, oh, that's nice, that's lovely. And then every time I went on Instagram, for some reason it would come back to me. Oh, like, you know, because what happened was I looked at the thing And she said she liked my work and that it would be a dream come true for her. And I thought, yeah, that's nice. I hope that happens for her. And then I thought, oh, well, I actually, you know, I'm I can make that happen for her. I was like, oh, yeah, yeah, I could do that, couldn't I? And then it was like, and then that transitioned into, yeah, yeah, I'll definitely do that. Sure, why wouldn't I do that? God, you know, what does it matter to me? It's not that big of a deal. It'll take me a couple of hours to do it, but, you know. And yeah, definitely going to do that. And then, you know, it was like, eventually I'm going to do that, thinking I'd probably just forget about it. But I didn't. Every time I went onto Instagram, I thought about it. So then I kind of went, okay, I'll just, yeah, it's not going to kill me to do it. So I found one, I just searched through her feed. I found a photo that I liked, I thought would transition well, and, you know, that I could work with. And I made it. Yeah, it took, you know, 3-4 hours, whatever. And no, it didn't take that long. But anyway, yeah, about 3 hours. And then I just sent it to her as a direct message and kind of said, have a nice day. And just thought, well, that's just a nice thing to do. And I kind of forgot about it. And she was very grateful. And then she said something about manifestation, right? And I went back and I read her original post. And she had written this big description about manifestation and, you know, manifesting and like, I have to, you know, be very clear here. Like, you know, I did a lot of personal development trainings back in the 80s, and you know, I was exposed to quite a lot of New Age stuff. So, and it's kind of, I wouldn't say I'm jaded about it or cynical about it, but I kind of had enough of it. So when people start talking about manifestation and things like that, I kind of glaze over a little bit. But something about the way she wrote about it made me curious to read more. And I thought, well, she's, you know, she's not saying anything that I disagree with. And it's, isn't it interesting that she had this intention of manifesting a piece of art by me? And I kind of, from my side of it, from the, you know, like to break down like manifestation, it's basically like, well, how do you make things happen? How do you get your goals? How do you get your dreams and that kind of thing? And the idea, like that kind of idea, I think where this lady was coming from, where Emma was coming from, was you put it out into the universe and then the universe gives it back to you, put it out into life, which I'm always a bit cautious of because, you know, that there was a famous book, I think it was the late 70s, maybe the early 80s, you know, do what you love and the money will follow, which I had a, you know, I had a superhuman go at and didn't find that that worked. And then there was a more recent version of that, I think was The Secret, which was pretty popular about 10 years ago. And everybody was like, oh, you just have to say you want it and it'll happen. And it, to me, it's like a recipe for disaster because there's so much more to it than that, than just, you know. But she seemed to be pretty okay with this in terms of her approach. But what I found very interesting was that it like to be on the other side of it, because, you know, people say my yoga art is very nice all the time, but I don't feel compelled to go and make them some. So as I kind of looked at it, what I found fascinating about it was to look at it from the other side, because it's nearly always been the other side for me of going, oh, I'd really like this thing to happen, and then, you know, trying to figure out how to do that or how to engage with my life to be like, I feel like at this stage of my life, I don't really invest too much in what I want. My whole kind of focus is to try and listen to the greater movement of life and be as with that as possible, and to not get in the way of it, and to just surf that wave, if you like, or be surf the wave. Yeah, no, that's not really it. It's kind of being, it's like a dance, and I want to be in the in the rhythm of the dance and not be kind of like, no, I don't like the rhythm, I want to go this my own rhythm, and I want to do these steps, and I, you know, I don't do that anymore. I'm completely captivated by the beauty of the dance, and I just want to be part of it, right? That's my kind of thing, right? But I think within that, there's a place for preferences, and there's a place to kind of go, well, I'd like this to happen, you know, if it can fit in with the bigger dance, great. So it was interesting, as I say, to be on the other side of it. So probably in the orchestra or whatever. Okay, I'm really stretching that analogy, but you get what I'm, I think you get what I'm saying. Which is to, because I felt like I was an instrument of life, you know, like, so I looked back at what she had said, and I, for me, and this is the whole reason I'm kind of saying it, because, you know, everyone's got things that they want. There's two things I thought really stood out for why I think it worked for her. One was she started off by acknowledging my work and saying that she thought it was great. Now, why I think that's important is not because it flattered or stroked my ego, which I'm very open to, by the way, if you anyone wants to do that. No, what I boiled down to for me was gratitude. It was like she was just being grateful that my yoga art existed, which applies to anything, you know, just being grateful. I think that's a really important part of it. I think that is kind of the powerhouse of it. And then she was very specific about what she, what her preference was. I don't want to say want, because I think wants are, can be a bit dangerous. Not dangerous, God. Can be problematic. Yeah. So she was very specific. She said it would be a dream come true for her to have a piece of yoga art made specifically for her. Very specific. And in terms of what her preference was, it wasn't like, you know, oh, I want to be really rich. That's a big, very vague thing. Or I want to be a big successful artist. That's a very vague thing. Or I want to sell a load of paintings. That's a very vague thing. She was very specific about what her preference was. She wanted, you know, a piece of art made specifically for her. That was her wish. So it wasn't even a demand. That's why I was saying about wanting is it can be a bit problematic. So I think those two things were very important. And from being on the other side of it and kind of look, you know, meditating or reflecting on what compelled me to get involved and actually make it happen for her, I think that those two things were the things that drove it for me. So yeah, I'm just passing that on. I thought it was a useful thing to observe. It's just something that's happened since we last spoke. So yeah, just passing that on for you. So yeah, that's pretty much it. I've got a lot of feedback from people saying how much they enjoy these catch-up episodes, which is lovely. And they, you know, it depends. The different things I talk to seem to resonate with different people. So I would encourage you to send me questions. Because I just end up talking about the sorts of things that are of interest to me. And that's fine if that's of interest to you. But the feedback that I've got from people is that, you know, it seems, and it's probably because there's so much going on at the moment, but it seems like everyone's going through a lot. So I'm quite okay about saying, I don't know the answer to that. I haven't a clue. But I've had quite a bit of life experience in different things. So I sort of feel like I'd much rather be talking about the sort of things that you're are having trouble with or that you have concerns about than just, you know, how much I love my new scythe and I love scything my garden, which is a lovely thing to talk about. That's fine. But yeah, feel free to send me questions. It's not like I'm going to read out your name or anything like that, but I think I would enjoy it more if I felt like I was speaking to what's of concern. So, I mean, it's fine if you don't, I understand, but I'm just kind of saying that to you. Yeah. Do feel free to send me questions. Because a lot of the time, and you know, certainly as I go more into this further emergence work, that half the time I don't know what I know until I'm asked a question, and then it just sort of comes out. And part of me is to the side going, oh, okay, yeah, that's right. I'd forgotten I knew that or that thing. And oh, okay, yeah, all right. Okay, all right, so that's it for this catch up. I hope you're well and of good cheer, and I'll speak to you again soon. Bye.
I've never felt this good in my entire life. Make me some spaghetti.
Actually, I'd prefer a cup of tea. A cup of tea would be lovely. So, yeah, just a little reminder, mainly because every second or third person who becomes a patron has got in touch with me and said, you know what, I've been listening to your podcast for ages And I didn't become a patron, not because I don't have the money, not because I don't think it's great. I just didn't get around to it. So this is a little friendly reminder that if you'd like to be a patron, you'd like to buy me a cup of tea, go to patreon.com/John Dalton, gently does it, all one word, or follow the link in the show notes to become a patron. I would really appreciate it if you could do that, particularly if you've been meaning to and you just haven't got around to it. It would be great. It would mean a lot to me. All right. Thank you. Bye. We are the Argyle Pimps. So buy us a drink. We're better than you thought, but not as good as we think. We are the Argyle Pimps. So buy us a drink. Come on, buy us a drink. Come on, buy us a drink. We are the Argyle Pimps. So buy us a drink. We're better than you thought, but not as good as we think. We are the Argyle Pimps.